Welcome to Pushing the Limits with your host, Lisa Tarmaty, where it's all about health optimization, anti-aging, longevity, and being the very best you can be. Brought to you by lisatarmaty.com.
Hey everyone, welcome into Pushing the Limits. Today I have the lovely Sean Wells to guest. Sean is known as the world's number one formulator. He's a formulator of supplements, okay? So he's an absolute expert. He's a registered dietitian. He's written a book called The Energy Formula. He's got over 1,000 formulations that he's made. He's patented many, many different ingredients, and he's just an all-round expert on high performance, health optimization, biohacking, longevity, you name it. So we do a deep dive into Sean's world today and his information, and I really hope you enjoy it. Please head over to our shop as well and check out what we do with our longevity and anti-aging supplements over at shop.lisatarmaty.com. You'll find that curated range because I'm always out there looking for people like Sean that have the greatest, the best, the most amazing things on the planet. And I've curated a whole bunch of these over on lisatarmaty.com in the shop there. Also, if you could give a rating and review to the show, we'd really appreciate it. And make sure that you subscribe on YouTube. We're doing a big push onto YouTube because YouTube is another great platform that we've been working on for quite a long time. We've got over 600 different videos on there on everything with all these amazing interviews and parts of these interviews and my documentaries and a whole lot of other stuff. So make sure you look up Lisa Tarmaty on YouTube and subscribe on there. Right, now over to the show with lovely Sean Wells. Well, hey everyone, welcome back to Pushing the Limits. Super excited to have you with me today, and I have uncovered another rock star for you guys to listen to. I have the ingredientologist with me, and you might be thinking, what the heck is an ingredientologist? I have the wonderful Sean Wells with me today, so welcome to the show, Sean. Fabulous to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, I'm going to diving into your extensive knowledge today on supplements and formulations and biohacking and longevity and all of those sorts of good things. Before we kick off, Sean, would you let me know a little bit of your background, you know? So tell me a little bit of your background.
Sure. I am a biochemist and a registered dietitian. I was a chief clinical dietitian for about a decade in long-term and acute care. I've formulated over 1,000 supplements, patented 40 unique ingredients, helped sell 11 companies in the supplement and biohacking space. I have a best-selling book called The Energy Formula that's on biohacking and supplements. I speak all over the world. I've been in 60 countries to speak on biohacking, mindset, psychedelics, and supplements are kind of my main areas of talks. I'll be speaking actually upcoming at Dave Asprey's event in Dallas, the Hack Your Health event in Austin. I will be in the Biohackers Summit in Finland, and Mind Valley U in Estonia. So yeah, a lot of places this year. Those are some of those ones coming up. And yeah, I'm excited to be on and connect with you and talk about your hyperbaric oxygen chamber you got there.
Yeah. You noticed that. Yeah. I've got a hyperbaric clinic. That's just the one in for home, but I have a clinic as well. Big fan of hyperbaric, obviously. Saved my mum's life a couple of times. So yeah, that's what tipped me into this world, actually, Sean, you know, was sort of mum getting an aneurysm and stroke sort of 8 years ago and then cancer and beating all the odds and still with us today with a few problems, but still here, you know, and largely down to supplements and biohacking, you know, hyperbaric, everything. We, you know, our whole house is taken up with biohacking equipment and stuff, so we're a bit nuts over here, but it seems to be working. Well, it's fantastic to hear what you're up to, because I'm jealous. I can't be at all of those conferences. Being over here in New Zealand, we're sort of stuck, you know, a little bit hard to travel with mum these days, so I don't get to go, so I have to live vicariously through things like podcasts, which is really, really cool.
Okay.
But Sean, What I really liked about your story too was you were someone who actually suffered a lot yourself. You had chronic fatigue, you had fibromyalgia, you Epstein-Barr, you had major problems with your mitochondria, and you cracked your own code. And this, for me, I always love listening to people who have been through the war and come out the other side to tell the tale. And would you mind sharing a little bit about that story?
Sure. I had a very difficult childhood. My home life was definitely complicated. I don't want to dwell on that, but I was also bullied at school. And it led to me being a junk food junkie, being morbidly obese, very depressed, suicidal thoughts fairly early on. And then that led to me, once I got into college, I started having body dysmorphia, disordered eating. I became anorexic at certain points, and then I became orthorexic with working out. But I did end up finding supplements and getting into bodybuilding, and it did at least get me out of, you know, going from 300 pounds to 150 pounds.
Wow.
As a pretty tall male, I was emaciated. I literally looked like a Holocaust victim. And, but it led to me, you know, starting to look into protein, bodybuilding, creatine, working out. And I did end up, you know, getting a pretty good body going, even though I still was not mentally healthy. I was kind of obsessed with, you know, protein 6 times a day and all the supplements.
Yeah.
But at least my body was more physically healthy, even though my brain wasn't quite there yet. And I ended up going to my medical doctor in between my sophomore and junior year of college and telling him all about the supplements, all the stuff that I was learning. And I thought he was going to tell me all this stuff was stupid. This is 30 years ago.
Yeah.
He ended up drawing out a lifeline for me between 20 and 80 and said, why not be happy between here and here?
Wow.
And I was in business school, and this was like, literally, it felt like he gave me my purpose, gave me at least license to go do it as a medical doctor. I didn't have Instagram and no. Tony Robbins and Oprah and, you know, all these things telling me go chase your dreams. Everyone was telling me to be realistic. And so this guy that, you know, I put on a pedestal as a medical doctor, you know, told me to go essentially pursue my passion. And I did just that. I ended up going back to get my graduate classes that I needed to get into my master's program at UNC Chapel Hill, which was my dream program where I studied biochemistry and nutrition. And, but along the way, I was still very abusive to myself, like just mentally, physically. I stayed in kind of orthorexic modes and then binge eating and certainly obsessed with diet, but obsessed with supplements, obsessed with being good enough, imposter syndrome. And that led to me getting Epstein-Barr, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, Hashimoto's, multiple brain tumors, probably about 15 different surgeries on my neck, my hips, my knees. As I was an athlete, but I was also just abusive to myself, like, you know, mentally and physically. Just was never good enough. I was always working like 80 hours a week, doing like really difficult workouts, like in the gym and, you know, on the basketball court and all these different sports that I was doing. And I was always getting infections and just breaking down. And I learned all the biohacks to keep myself going, but it wasn't like I was in a healthy space.
Yeah.
So it taught me a lot on how to survive what I was doing to my body. But it wasn't until I really did some plant medicine work, which was only about a little over 4 years ago, that everything shifted for me when I started giving myself grace, learning self-love, and getting into a space where I really started to appreciate the feminine aspect of biohacking, if you will, or optimization, which is more of self-care, like grounding and journaling and, you know, sun gazing and forest bathing and, you know, ecstatic dance and yoga and flow and, you know, these kinds of things versus, you know, peptides and extreme training and cold plunges and like all these very masculine ideas, right?
Yeah.
That it's like kind of that masculine energy versus feminine energy. I was just always in push, go.
I can so really, relate. Oh, geez.
I was just so abusive to myself. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't until like I learned the other part of that. It's important to get into your masculine to go chase it sometimes. But like if you pay attention to like the Gary V's or the Jockos and all these guys that are, you know, Navy SEALs, it's like hustle and grind. And it's like sympathetic nervous system and ultra sympathetic nervous system. Like we're never getting the parasympathetic nervous system where we're rest and digest. We're never getting into self-care. We're never getting into the feminine side of the equation with the yin and yang. Wow. Right. So like I was just very unbalanced. I was never centered. I was always trying to push the boundary.
Yep.
And then if you get sick when you're pushing the boundary, there's no room for error and you get really sick. And so that's where I was. I was like right on the edge all the time. I was definitely pushing the limits and maximized everything I had. But also when I got sick or an injury, it was bad. Really, really bad. So that's where I was.
Wow. And then and you've worked your way out of that. I mean, I can so relate to that story, Sean, because I had, you know, like one for one. Like really. And pushing the absolute limits and ultra endurance, you know, running ultra marathons all over the world for 25 years, absolutely smashing the crap out of my body and pushing it, you know, in the career and all of that sort of stuff and high performance all the time and then crashing and, you know, the body dysmorphia, all of that sort of stuff in my early teenagehood. So I just like, mate, I get you. I feel you. And this is, but I think, you know, like the beauty of having a backstory, you know, like you do and similar to mine in some ways, is that when you come out and you're still working through shit, let's be honest, you know, like I'm sure we're still working through shit. I certainly am. I'm 55 and I'm still working through stuff. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. but you learn to appreciate everything and you learn to really help others because you've gone through this battle zone and it drives you to help other people not go there, right? And chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and Epstein-Barr and all of that sort of stuff, that smashes the mitochondria. And I think, you know, that's a good jumping off point for us to really dive into supplement world and biohacking world. You know, I heard you say on one of your podcasts that the mitochondria are, you know, at the root of 99% of all diseases and aging and biological aging versus chronological aging, and that mito is the new keto. So let's jump off there. Like, how did you get yourself out of this extreme fatigue state? Because that is basically a mitochondrial state, that your mitochondria are in a bad shape. You're not producing any energy, and a lot of people listening to this, I bet, are dealing with that, especially, you know, post-COVID, long COVID, all that sort of stuff. What's your take on mitochondria?
Right. So the mitochondria, going back to high school biology is, or maybe middle school biology, depending, is the cellular powerhouse, that little factory in the cell. And we were told that there was one in the cell, but that is a gross oversimplification. Any very energy intensive cell is going to have many mitochondria. For example, in a cardiomyocyte, which is a heart cell, you're going to have over 5,000 mitochondria present. Okay, so, you know, think of your heart and your brain are very energy dependent. Mm-hmm. So those are going to need a lot of mitochondria, and those are going to be producing a lot of the energy currency for the cell. ATP, adenosine triphosphate. So that's high energy phosphates that literally create energy in these reactions. So as you've pointed out, I guess you've listened to some podcasts of mine.
Oh, I love your stuff.
There's insufficient cellular energy states, and that acronym is known as ICE. And in the brain, it can often be referred to as brain energy gap, where there's essentially a shortfall of energy over the demands. So a lot of times it feels like we're working on the car as we're driving it down the road. And this is the situation that we're getting into. And as you pointed out, I believe that about 99% of disease is actually related to mitochondrial or metabolic dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So it's not genetic in nature. Very few diseases are inborn or something that we're born with at birth. So most diseases are metabolic in nature, like Alzheimer's, like cancer, Parkinson's, PCOS, like just down the line, almost all these diseases that we think of are metabolic. So it's related to blood sugar being elevated. It's related to insulin resistance and mitochondrial dysfunction and all of these things that are taking place in our bodies, things that we can absolutely prevent.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is the idea of eustress and allostatic load and capacity that I talk about in my book. My book, The Energy Formula, revolves around the idea of resilience. To be resilient, you do have to put the body under stress. You do have to get into your masculine, but you do need that balance, right? That's what we're talking about. You can't stay in this energetic drive all the time. You can't stay under stress, under heavy load all the time. So there has to be recovery. In exercise physiology, we often refer to it as overtraining.
Yep.
But I had a great exercise physiologist that told me the better term is under recovery. And that's an interesting way to look at it, that we're not taking enough time to recover and repair. And that's kind of what I refer to. This is more kind of the plant medicine, the yin and yang world of, you know, where I say masculine and feminine. Don't get caught up in that if that doesn't resonate with you, because that has nothing
to just do with an analogy.
Male, yep. Male or female, if you will. It's just, it's about the balance of energies.
Yep.
Which is very correlated to, as I was saying, the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system and the way our body and quite often the universe actually works. So it's important to have eustress, which is EU stress. That's the way that's spelled and pronounced, is EU stress, eustress. Mm-hmm. And then if you have too much stress, it goes from being good to the Goldilocks zone, which is the perfect amount of stress for the perfect amount of adaptation, to now starting going down the slope of distress. Mm-hmm. So even good stress can become distress. So think about if you're, you know, at the time, like you just got divorced, you're menstruating, you're, you know, fasting, you're on keto, you're trying to train, and then you do a cold plunge.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, cool. Cold plunge may be a good idea, maybe a eustress sometimes, but at this exact moment, it is a distress because your stress bucket, which we refer to as your allostatic capacity, is overflowing.
Yeah.
And you have too much allostatic load. And so hormesis is the word that means that stress that's creating adaptation. So there's only a certain amount of eustress that you can take. Now, if you grow your stress bucket, you can take on more stress. Mm-hmm. And that's the idea of hormesis. So you have to like understand your body, try and hit the balance of stress, positive stress, and then recovery, and then positive stress and recovery, and getting yourself uncomfortable so that you can adapt, you can grow, you can have that hormetic response. And so this is kind of the lesson with life, and really in kind of mentality, which I talk about in the book, The Energy Formula as well, this also works too in Stoicism. Stoicism, like The Obstacle mm-hmm. is the Way by Ryan Holiday, is kind of the resilient mindset. The obstacle is the way. This is how we grow stronger. We don't want a path that has no obstacles. We don't want someone to remove the obstacle. We don't want a shortcut around the obstacle. The obstacle actually is the way to greater strength and greater ease.
Yep.
You know, it's there's, I forget what the verse is in the Bible. Like there's something about like, you know, grant me the strength, you know, to like, basically like the same idea, like where you don't want to like remove the hardship. Like you want to essentially have God in this case make you stronger so that you can deal with the hardship, right? Yep.
And strength comes from struggle type of thing. That was always strength on my boxing club wall.
Exactly. And so that's, you know, that's mentally, physically, spiritually, financially. That's how we get better. We all want some kind of life with ease, but I think you can give up that idea, just like the idea of fairness. The idea of fairness does not exist in the world, and ease does not exist. No one will have ease consistently, or else you will be so weak. You will be like the boy in the bubble that like a single germ could kill you.
Yep.
Like that single hardship could come in your life and it will overwhelm you.
And this is what, you know, like with that. With our kids, you know, we make them wrap them in cotton wool and we don't let them hurt themselves. And well, obviously don't want them to get run over by a car, but you want them to have their own experiences of pain so that they can actually learn, oh, I shouldn't do that because that hurts, you know. And if, when we take away that thing, one of my friends, my producer, Peter Tainui, said to me the other day, choose your heart. You got to choose your heart. Life is hard. There's going to be hard on both sides of the fence. So either if you sit on the couch and eat potato chips and watch Netflix all day, you're going to end up with disease and that'll be hard. If you're going to the gym, you're training hard or you're training for a marathon, that's hard, but choose your hard. There's hard on both sides and there are consequences of your actions. I love that, eh? That's just a real gold. So you just got to, you got to understand that when you don't do things, there's also consequences for that, you know, when you're eating the bad stuff. And, you know, and as someone who's spent 8 years rehabilitating my mum after all her, you know, health journeys, if I could go back 20 years and rewind the clock and not let her get diabetic, not let her get overweight, let her smoke in her youth, all of those things, then we would have prevented the hell that we've been through the last 8 years, you know. But by the same token, when she was written off 100 times by the medical profession, they were wrong. And she's still going and she's sitting on the exercise cycle next to me now. And, you know, she's still fighting, you know. So it doesn't, I think the lessons that we can learn from that too are that it's if you're breathing, it's not too late. Don't think that, oh, I've done all these bad things in my youth or whatever. There's no point now. I must just carry on. Any day, like I you know, work with people in their late 80s and 90s and they're changing their ways and reversing diabetes and things like that at 90 years old, you know, like this, it's the mind that that plays a role. And if you want to live, you know, and that's your decision, if you want to go and you want to fight and you want to be here and you're able to change, it's not too late because I've seen it. So, you know, I think that's really a really gold thing. So, okay, so mitochondria, these powerhouses, there's, you know, like you said, heart, brain, the oocytes, man, or however you say that word, the eggs, they're like something like 400 to 500,000 mitochondria in those little things, right? So that's one of the reasons they go first, because we lose our mitochondrial, you know, function over time. So what are the things that we can do to protect our mitochondria, to cause mitochondrial biogenesis? You know, what supplements, what hacks, what therapies would you recommend as a mitochondrial stack?
So that's a great question. And what you're going to find is that idea of hormesis carries over to the mitochondria, and it's called mitohormesis. You can look up the term. And that's literally going to help the mitochondria themselves grow stronger, more resistant to disease. It will increase the amount of mitophagy, which is autophagy in the mitochondria, which is that kind of self-eating. Detox and clean up, right? Exactly. So what's going to happen is that you need to put stress, positive stress, use stress on the mitochondria. And then you will have mitochondrial biogenesis as well, where you're creating new mitochondria and you're avoiding this cellular senescence, right? Like that kind of cellular aging and death.
Zombie cells. Yep.
Exactly. And so you will also have a life with more energy because you have more mitochondria. You're creating more ATP. You won't feel that chronic fatigue syndrome. You won't feel that shortfall of energy. You won't get into situations where your body needs so much, but you're making a lot less, which is going to lead to not only a lack of energy, but then you'll have hypertonic muscles, you'll have inflammation, you'll have high blood glucose and insulin, and then you will have disease.
Wow.
Whole lot of disease.
Hypertonic. I didn't realize that was connected. I never connected the dots there, hypertonic muscles.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. So, you know, this is what we're trying to avoid, obviously. So can we put our body under the right type of stress? That's the right amount of stress and have recovery. And a big part of this is your mental approach to this whole thing, having that stoic reframing mindset where everything is happening for me, not to me, that everything is for the betterment of me, that there's growth that's going to come out of this. This is the growth mindset, is that reframing mindset. Mm. This is NLP. This is Tony Robbins. This is Brendan Burchard and, you know, Jim Quick and go down the line and Joe Dispenza. It's all NLP. It's all like old Bandler hypnosis. Like this is all like reframing. And of course, if you go all the way back, it's stoicism. Mm. So you have to have that mindset going in that this is happening for me, not to me. And that will change everything about how you can deal with physical stress and physical hardships as well. So what I would recommend is, you know, some obvious stressors, things like you've got a hyperbaric oxygen chamber there.
Yep.
That's one. Obviously cold plunges, red light, hot sauna. Contrasting between cold plunges and hot saunas, even better. Obviously working out, but probably best is high intensity interval training or some of these unique hacks around working out where you're using bands,
yep,
right? Like using bands and weight so that you have like a full load eccentric and concentric. We find like eccentric is actually where you really build muscle, the negative, not the concentric. Most people think it's the concentric positive. Mm. It's actually on the negative. And what happens is a lot of times, like if we're doing bench press or curls, like that's where we kind of like get momentum and kind of flop our way down. And, you know, it's not really controlled. But if you have bands, one, you'll have a very controlled negative with a power curve all the way throughout, but also the turnaround, which is where you build the most strength. When you're going from your negative to positive, it's like that little bit of that motion. Like think of like kind of when you're at the bottom of the bench press, like to get that strength to start the movement,
yep,
is actually where you build a lot of strength. You build the most muscle on the negative. You build the most strength on the turnaround.
Wow.
And so if you have the eccentric pull, and that constant power curve throughout, it's not consistent throughout. There's definitely a change in it, but you have like a resistance in the eccentric, mm-hmm, with the band, that you're going to build more muscle and get a greater effect.
Wow,
so
like
that's
doubling.
Where like if I'm doing bench press, I love to like put, yeah, sorry. So I love to put the band underneath the bench press, put the band in each one of my hands, and then put the dumbbells in my hands. So I'm kind of getting, you know, both while I'm doing that. Some other hacks that I love, like with workouts, is intra-set stretching. So this is like when you're, for example, they've shown that, again, this is that eccentric thing and that turnaround thing that I'm talking about. When the muscle is fully lengthened, it's stretched to its maximum. This is very difficult on the muscle. So when you're fully flexed on the opposite side of the muscle, like for example, when you're fully flexed in your tricep, you have to be fully extended and stretched on your bicep.
Yep.
And this is fatiguing the bicep. So if in between your bicep curls, you go to an intra-set stretch. So between your sets, you're fully flexing as hard as you can your triceps. You're stretching that bicep and you're fatiguing it more. Now, when you go back into your set to do bicep curls, your muscle is already fatigued and you're putting that muscle under more stress and you will get a greater amount of hypertrophy and growth.
Wow. That's
another
gold. Just interrupting the show to let you know about our patron community here and the podcast at Pushing the Limits. We've been going for 8 years and we really need your support to keep the show on air and free to everybody so that everyone gets this fantastic information from all these great doctors, scientists, athletes, business people from all around the world. So we would love you to come and join us. You get a lot of exclusive member benefits when you do, but really it's about supporting the show and keeping it on air. And for a coffee or two a month, that would be fantastic if you can come and join us. You can go to patron.lisatarmaty.com. That's patron.lisatarmaty.com and check it all out.
Yeah, another method with workouts is around the idea of cell swelling. And this is what's known as blood flow restriction or katsu. It's a Japanese method where you put a cuff around like your upper thigh, like pretty close to your crotch, or a cuff around your like upper shoulder bicep area, and you're tying that off with what would be about an 8 out of 10 out of pressure, so that you're restricting venous blood flow but not arterial blood flow.
Gotcha.
So yeah, you don't want to go too tight, but the idea is it literally feels like you're exhausted when you're doing, let's say, curls or you know, leg extensions or whatever you're doing, hamstring curls. It's going to feel like you're already exhausted because that blood is sitting there, your lactic acid is sitting there, and it takes it's literally kind of like fast forwarding through you through, like, you know, your first set is more like your fourth set of what would be normal set.
So shorter training time too.
Yeah. And then if you start adding these things with like bands and high intensity interval training and intraset stretching and katsu and drop sets and supersets, and, you know, now you're getting into a space where you can get so much done in so much less time. But the key is, like the idea with high-intensity interval training, is that you want the maximal amount of effort, because you will not get adaptation. You will not get that eustress. You will not get that hormesis. You will not get that mitochondrial biogenesis with low-intensity, steady-state exercise.
Yep.
Like, jogging is not going to get you there. Like, you know, repping out is not going to get you there. If you still got gas in the tank when you're repping out or, you know, whatever you're doing, that's not going to get you there. You have to like hit the point of exhaustion and be done. This is where sprints come in. This is where training to failure comes in. This is where drop sets and supersets and, you know, blood flow restriction, all of this comes in, is that you're really maxing out. Like, you're going to get the adaptation at like that 95% threshold and up. Yep. You're not going to get adaptation at 40, 50, 60% of effort. So you're burning calories, you're moving your body. That's great. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you're not going to put the body under a stress where it's going to adapt and grow stronger.
Yeah. I mean, as an ultra marathon runner who spent decades training the wrong way, really, just by doing long distance running, you know, and that was and didn't do weights and didn't do, because back in the day, we didn't know. We just thought, run longer if you're going to run long, right? If you're going to run across the desert, just keep running, right? the adaptation just was never there. You just would not get better. You get out of adaptation in the fact that, like, now, because I don't do ultra marathons anymore, partly because of this, I know better, you know, like how to live longer. it wouldn't create that weight loss. You'd just have inflammation. You'd be overtrained in the thing that you're doing. You'd be weaker. You'd be catabolic. Your hormones are out. inflammation mm-hmm. in the body. I'm really selling ultramarathoning running, by the way. but because of this lack of that adaptation, like you weren't going to max ever. You were just plodding along for, you know, hours and hours a day. And that really, the adaptation that I got was that I could stay on my feet for days, right? I could run for days. So there was adaptation, but it wasn't like a physical, like you don't, if you look at a lot of the ultra marathon runners, maybe like David Goggins is an exception, but they don't look super athletic, right?
Right.
Because of this. So actually catabolic, often quite, you know, a lot of muscle mass. So generally not overweight. They've generally got strong legs and strong calves and thighs, but upper body's often flaccid. Not healthy specimens generally, you know, like not super, super healthy.
And it brings up a great point about catabolism is that you're also in a state where, yes, you're breaking down muscle for energy using the BCAAs, the branched chain amino yep. acids, muscle pool for energy, because you don't have enough calories present. And then you're in a situation where you're in a negative nitrogen state. It's going to take you more, not less, leucine to drive muscle protein synthesis, which is known as anabolic resistance. So you need greater amounts of protein boluses. And that means like you need to eat more protein at one time. This, I need to say this, like, because it gets confused a lot. People think protein is protein throughout the day. It's not. It's been really shown that you need boluses of protein. So wow. having 10 grams here and 5 grams here and 5 grams here does not do very much.
Wow. Okay.
You need to have 30 to 50 grams of protein in a meal to optimize muscle protein synthesis.
Mm-hmm.
And much better form of protein, literally 2 times better, is animal protein over vegan protein.
Yeah.
Wherever you land on that is fine, but just know that the leucine level is about half in vegan protein. So you either need to, and this has been shown in studies, you either need to double the amount of vegan protein, or this is probably a lot easier way and a good hack if you're vegan, is just add like a gram or two of fermented leucine to your meals that have the vegan protein. Wow. Now you're optimizing muscle protein synthesis.
Wow.
So that's really important. So that gets into supplements.
Yes.
What I would recommend around optimizing for mitochondrial health. So one of the things that you're going to want to do is increase NAD levels, NAD to NADH, which is really fuel for the mitochondria to make ATP. And it also protects the DNA and a number of other things. So to increase NAD levels, I'm a big fan of NMN.
Mm-hmm.
Over NR. I actually yep. don't like NR as much. So I like NMN.
Yeah, we sell NMN.
I like things like CoQ10 and PQQ, mm-hmm. which help the electron transport chain part of the mitochondria. Again, it's going to have the most effect in these like heart cells and brain cells. That's where you see the biggest impact of things like CoQ10 and PQQ. There's an ingredient that I helped bring to the market called ergothionine.
Yes.
That is a mitochondrial antioxidant. Very unique. You have your own transport system for it in your body. You have your own storage system for it in your body. It's been shown to have a deficiency when you get enough. There's a cognitive impairment, and you can only get it through the diet, and it comes in mushrooms, certain beans, and organ meats. And so that hits all the criteria and then some to be a new vitamin, of which we think it will be.
Yeah. So yeah.
Ergothionine, really, really potent ingredient. I like spermidine, I think, yep. is really interesting to increase autophagy and mitophagy.
Yeah, that piece isn't well known. The autophagy piece is sort of well known, eh? But the mitophagy piece of spermidine, which I'm a huge fan of, is not talked about much.
Yep. And then polyphenols. Mm-hmm. So polyphenols will inhibit NADAs, and that yep. enzyme is also called CD38 that breaks mm-hmm. down NAD faster. So as we age, we make less NAD, we break it down faster. As we're under more stress, you break it down faster. you know, being under junk light, having alcohol, having stress, not getting enough sleep, like, you know, all these kinds of things have been shown to increase
low grade
down of NAD and help reduce essentially the production of NAD. So what we want to do is inhibit that breakdown as well. So NMN is helping create more, and these polyphenols can help inhibit the breakdown. So net net, if you're taking both, you're going to end up with more NAD.
Could I ask a bit of a question there on the NAD, because that's something I'm really deep in the weeds on at the moment. And when David Sinclair brought out his book and everyone was like on NMN and NR and, you know, resveratrol and co, we sort of since found out, you know, a little bit more about the NAD, how it works in the body, and it's not just NMN. I'm a big fan of things like, you know, epigenin on the CD38 side, you know, or parsley, yeah, you know, chamomile, that type of thing that helps with that. But it's the NAMPT enzyme, which is the rate limiting step on that salvage pathway, right? When older people just take NMN, one of my teachers, Dr. Earth, she said that can be bad, right? Because you don't have the NAMPT necessarily to use that NAD. You use it once, but you can't recycle it, and then the niacinamide can back up in the cell, which can upregulate that NMT, which is that methyl transferase, and you start using up methyl donors, which can be a problem. So taking things like TMG and B12 and B9 and other methyl donors can be useful. Creatine, phosphatidylcholine. So this whole NAD picture needs a little bit more clarification, I think, you know, like, because you want to be, when you're older too, you have more senescent cells, you've got low-grade inflammation, chronic inflammation going on, increasing the CD8 level, and then you've got that drain. And who was I listening to? Dr. Nicola Conlon from New Shido time, talking about this, and just a small impact on that CD38 level. If you can drop that, then your NAD will be much better than just putting NMN into the mix. We want NMN, but we've got to, you know, the drain on our NAD is also important, because also you don't want to put NMN, get more NAD, but it's just being drained by CD38. And is that actually detrimental, because we're actually feeding that chronic inflammation pathway, so to speak? Do you know? I'm sort of still learning that, but what's your take on that whole?
Yeah, so that's a great point. I think if you are doing plenty of methylators, to your point, I think things like SAMe and TMG, which is known as betaine, creatine, we see, if you look at the data on creatine, people think about muscle power and strength. That's cool. That's where a lot of it started, and I love it for those purposes as an athlete. But man, if you look at it, like, I feel like this should be in every multivitamin. And again, as a vegan, you are not going to get enough of this. So please supplement with this to help with not only muscle power and strength, and muscle is probably the most important predictor of longevity.
Exactly.
But also brain health, reproductive health. We've seen it help a traumatic brain injury, speaking of brain health, bone density. So creatine as a buffer is very powerful. So just looking at some of the other systems and if they're dysregulated, that can be a problem. So I was going to say that dihydroberberine, an ingredient I've worked on, which is an active form of berberine, is actually going to have positive mitochondrial stress, similar to berberine or metformin, when taken at the right dose, as well as help regulate insulin and blood glucose. And so we found that this combination, to your point, with things like NMN or niacin, and with things like the polyphenols, and then certainly if you're rounding it out by helping the health of the mitochondria with things like CoQ10, PQQ, spermidine, ergothionine, I think you're in a really good position. But you bring up a good point. But I do think dihydroberberine is a really, really powerful one. It's probably my number one ingredient to take, period. It works on the AMPK pathway, the AMP kinase pathway, which is one of the most powerful anti-aging pathways that we know of. It also is a GLP-1 agonist,
really?
Which is everything like Ozempic and semaglutide and all those things. So, and dihydroberberine is the optimized form of berberine where you don't have the GI distress. Your doses are about 20% of what they are with berberine. It does not lower B12 like metformin and some of these other kinds of things. So it's really, and it lasts longer in plasma, which means you only need to take it 2 times a day versus 3 times a day.
The microbiome piece of that puzzle, because some people don't have the microbiome to actually make berberine into the active form.
Exactly. Yeah. There's bioindividuality there that you have difficulty converting berberine to dihydroberberine. And so this is bypassing that step, similar to like taking methylcobalamin or, you know, any of the methylated B vitamins where you're avoiding those steps. Like I know a lot of people know about MTHFR and 5-methyltetrahydrofolate, which is the active version of folate. It's already in its enzymatically active form. You don't have to go through the several steps, of which many people have deficiencies and issues with.
Yeah, so never take folic acid on that point of anything. I think that's a point. Like, it still shocks me when I go and I look at a supplement from good companies and they've got folic acid in there, and I'm like, what the hell are they doing? You know,
A third of people out there that can't do that very well. So
exactly.
Yeah.
That's a fair amount of people that are going to end up backed up in their methylation if they're taking folic acid. So anything with folic acid in it, chuck it out and get, you know, the active forms of the folate. Because that can really, and that, you know, Ben Lynch's work on that's been quite fascinating to dive into. Back to your point so dihydroberberine is something that's been a favorite of mine, or berberine's been favorite for a long time, and now understanding this whole dihydroberberine, you know, being the next level, because some of us don't have the microbiome. It's a bit like urolithin A, isn't it? Like if you don't have the microbiome for ellagic acid, you're not going to sort of get the benefits of it. And of course, when you're older, whose microbiome's good? Not many, you know. And this is a point, you know, like, I'm a crazy biohacker, right? And I take over 70 things a day. And what's your take on the synergy of, you know, like, because you get a lot of, you know, when I say something like that, people are like, what the hell? You know, like, your liver's going to be impacted. And I'm like, well, a lot of them are pro liver, like, they're really good for your liver and they're supporting the mitochondria and they're doing, and my liver enzymes are fine. But what's your take on that? That synergy of things, because no one studied that, right? Let's be honest. No one's put 70 ingredients together and gone, that's a good idea.
I have a lot of thoughts on that. So, yeah, actually in medicine, we used to call it polypharmacy. When you have a number of these drugs and we don't know the drug-to-drug or drug-nutrient interactions, we might know two drugs together, but we don't know three, let alone some people in some of these nursing homes I was at were taking more than 70 different medications. We certainly do not know the impact of those kinds of things.
Medications,
and the same is true of taking all these highly concentrated supplements to where they're really nowhere reminiscent of what would occur in nature. You know, they're highly concentrated, potentized versions of these ingredients in very large orthomolecular doses. So what the net effect of that is, we don't know. Like, I do believe, and I used to take over 100 supplements a day, everything in super high doses. What I do now is similar to the idea of putting the body under a certain amount of stress and then removing that stress and then allowing for recovery.
Cycle. Yep.
Is I'm cycling through ingredients, right? So I don't stay on something consistently, because I think in time that becomes your baseline. Like if I'm taking exogenous testosterone, like doing TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, exogenous outside the body, exogenous testosterone, I'm going to stop making endogenous testosterone. My body will stop making it because it sees plenty of it. And it's like, hey, we don't need to make it anymore. Right. So that same thing can happen, like where something becomes our baseline. this is why I think it's really important, like metabolic flexibility, the idea of carb cycling. And I like the idea of fat cycling, of even calorie cycling with fasting, essentially, right? Like, so I like the idea of cycling. I think that's what our bodies are made for.
I agree. Yeah.
So I like varying the doses. I like taking them out of the picture. I like bringing them back in. And I just do it kind of by intuition.
Yeah.
Just listening to my body, seeing what I think I need then. But I don't try and stay on anything consistently all the time anymore. I cycle through things. So
are there any exceptions like creatine or magnesium or anything?
Yes. Yeah, you could make the argument, I think, for something that is like a true nutrient / substrate versus something that works by inhibiting an enzyme or, you know, working on a pathway like that. I think when something's like a substrate where it needs to be used in a reaction, that you could argue that it could probably be taken more consistently.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think there's benefit to like, at times being depleted and then repleting.
Yep.
But I do think, yes, it would probably be a much greater period of cycling, especially up and down and off, when it is something like where it's essentially working like most medications work, which is like how they inhibit certain enzymes pathways like that.
Yeah. Now that makes a whole lot of sense. And you know, like there's not enough research on these, you know, polypharmacy or poly supplement regimes, and we're all guessing. And you know, I think it really pays to do your own blood work and do your own testing if you can afford it, microbiome and all of that sort of thing, to see where you are actually at, and are you pushing too hard on this or not hard enough on that? And testing's got its own problems sometimes, but just to sort of understand. I think also understanding where you are in life, so what someone who's elderly will need versus what someone who's middle-aged will need or someone who's young will need will be very, very different. And understanding also, so like the going back to that NAD pathway, what is sometimes like beneficial for a younger person isn't necessarily beneficial when you put it one for one into an elderly person, and you've got to be a little bit more aware of the biochemistry of that. And none of us have the answer. Like the studies are literally coming out day by day now, and you know, we're getting more and more of an insight into these longevity pathways, the sirtuin genes, the NAD, the FOXO3, the, you know, all of these amazing longevity pathways that we're trying to exploit, but we're not probably 100% there yet. And in 5 years, we may go, oh, we made a bit of a mistake there and we probably shouldn't have done this, you know, exactly how we did it. And I think that's valid too for drugs, by the way. And every area of science is an evolving beast. So,
well, I do think like the whole sirtuin theory does revolve exactly around like this idea of being anti-fragile to create greater resilience. Like when you're depleted, when you're fasting, when you're cold plunging, when you're you know, under heavy stress, that's when you see the sirtuin genes upregulate. And so that holds true to the idea that I'm talking about. I actually think this idea of like where we're constantly, you know, maybe through a wearable of some kind, we could constantly test for all the nutrients, and then it could give us all the nutrients we need through some kind of like goo or whatever. And then we're like in real time, like, oh, he's depleted, let me add it. Like that would make us so weak. That would be the worst for our actual resilience. And it would certainly, like, you would never have the sirtuin genes activated at all. And so, like, that idea, I think, is a really bad idea. And, you know, that's kind of the idea of, like, where everything's going with personalized nutrition. I think we could actually get, we could overdo it where we're making ourselves weak. So we want the stress, we want the adaptation, we want the periods of depletion. So it's really important to think about it. Just all goes back to what I was talking about, the idea of the obstacle being the way.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you think, you know, I always think back to my dad, who unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but he was a man of the land, right? He was, you know, born in a dirt shack somewhere, didn't have shoes until he went to high school. he was out in nature all day, every day. And despite the fact that he was a smoker, which was his downfall in the end, he was healthy up until 81 and strong and powerful, you know, despite not having to, you know. Yep. Because he was going with the rhythms of nature, you know what I mean? And he was outside all day with his hands in the dirt and he was eating real food most of the time, you know. And then, when he was older, he got into too many pies and fish and chips and things like that. But, you know, that was a bit of a but I do think he probably would have lived to 100 if he hadn't smoked and done those sorts of things. I'll never know now. But he was powerful. He was a powerful, strong man at 81, you know.
Well, that's what we see when we look at the blue zones. We don't see people that are biohacking in the blue zones. We see people that are surrounded by people they love.
Yep.
They have purpose. They have passion. They take time to enjoy their food. They live life with less distraction. They're not as caught up into keeping to time and being like a slave to time. They're more present and mindful with their lives. They tend to be around the ocean, which is restorative. So there's some really interesting things about the blue zones that we can learn. And it kind of goes more back to, again, these kind of feminine energies. We've gotten really good at capitalism with, you know, this masculine drive, but we're not very good at like the restorative and the healing and the self-care kind of component. And I believe that's where why you're seeing biohacking evolve into human optimization and kind of soften a bit.
Mm, I love that. And Sean, you've got to wrap up shortly because you've got something else to get to. But I just wanted to ask you one last, because there was actually a whole bunch of supplements that you've developed that I really wanted to dive into. Just interrupting the show to let you know about my longevity and anti-aging supplement range. I'd love you to go and check it out. Go to my website, lisatarmaty.com, and hit the shop button, and you'll see a curated range of supplements, the latest in anti-aging, longevity, health optimization, performance optimization. I've gone out into the world, interviewed the most amazing doctors and scientists, as you'll know if you follow the show, and gone and got some of the best products that are out there. Stuff that I give to my family, that's what's in my range. So go and check it out at lisatarmaty.com. But just briefly, paraxanthin, that was on my radar as something that you've developed and patented. Can you just give us a brief synopsis on what paraxanthin is?
Yes. So that's thank you for bringing that up. So it's a metabolite of caffeine. Caffeine, about 60% of us are slow metabolizers of caffeine with the CYP1A2 gene. Mm-hmm. So that is the majority of us do not metabolize caffeine well. And actually, fast metabolizers get very little benefit from caffeine and can go straight to bed after they have their caffeine or coffee. And so when we're talking about 60% of the population or more not really functioning that well with caffeine, not really getting much benefit from caffeine, and certainly dealing with a lot of side effects from the caffeine, the anxiety, the jitters, the sleep disruption, the brain fog, on and on and on that we've heard. If you go to paraxanthin, which is one of the three metabolites caffeine turns into in the body, it's metabolized into theobromine, theophylline, and paraxanthin. Paraxanthin is where you get the majority of the benefit from caffeine and you avoid the side effects of caffeine itself and theophylline, which is very side effect ridden.
Wow.
So it's really a cleaning up of the idea of caffeine. And what we're seeing is dramatically different effects on the brain where it's increasing nitric oxide, where we're not seeing that with caffeine via PDE9 inhibition. Mm-hmm. And that's both to muscles and the brain. It's increasing acetylcholine, serotonin, dopamine is about 50% greater than caffeine itself.
Wow.
We see increased decrease beta amyloid plaque and increase BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factors, and neuroplasticity. We're seeing it increase glutathione and catalase and decrease oxidative stress. So basically all the ways I know that the brain ages, we're seeing it actually reverse.
Wow.
Not only that, you're getting the adenosine inhibition, you're getting the wakefulness that you get with a typical caffeine. And we're seeing that HRV is actually improved, whereas typically with caffeine, we see that it's worsened. Mm-hmm. So really exciting stuff. We can't wait to look at it with older populations with traumatic brain injury and some of these kinds of things.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
When we looked at elderly mice in this Walter Morris maze test, basically it's called escape latency, like how quickly they could find their way to this ledge. Without the paraxanthine, it took around 60 seconds. With the paraxanthine, it took around 20 seconds. So this is like a massive
exponential,
whatever it is, 300% difference. So we believe that the kind of the older the model, which is really hard to recruit for, it's really easy to kind of get these 18 to 23 year old males in college, but it's very difficult to get healthy older populations and recruit for them. Because as soon as they have a disease state, they have to be excluded, and just getting older a university is difficult as well. So anyway, we're looking at how to recruit for some of those tests, but that's really exciting. We've done a test around fat loss, really significant fat loss and lipolysis with paraxanthine. So we're actually doing e-gaming study, and we're seeing a time effect where it actually gets better with continued use, whereas caffeine gets worse with continued use. So really, really exciting stuff.
Oh man, that's crazy. And like I've got a biotech company over here. We'd be really keen to get it down here in New Zealand. So we'll have to talk off air for that, see whether we can do something with you there. But that is exciting. I'd love to know the results of the elderly one, because obviously I'd love to put that into mum's regime if it was safe to do so, you know, because and Alzheimer's and, you know, with diabetes and all of that sort of insulin resistance picture, so many people dealing with brain fog and all of that and reaching for caffeine constantly in order to get through the day, but with all the downstream side effects of caffeine. So this is a very exciting one, paraxanthine. Sean, I've taken up enough of your time today. I'd love to sit and talk to you for hours, actually, but I'm very, very, very grateful for your time and your learnings and your book and your work. Please, everybody, go and follow Sean. Tell everybody where they can find your book, your Instagram, all of that sort of good stuff.
So seanwells.com, SHAWNWELLS, seanwells.com is where you'll find a lot about me. My newsletter, that's free, at Sean Wells on Instagram, is where you'll find a lot of cool content, infographics about stacks. And then energyformula.com is where you can find the book, or go to amazon.com. But energyformula.com has a bunch of extras that you can get. And I have the book in hardcover, softcover, Audible, and ebook as well. So
you're everywhere.
I'm actually coming out with a chorus for it as well later this year. So,
oh wow,
a lot's coming.
And over 1,000 formulations and all of this sort of great stuff. So, Sean, you're just an absolute minefield of information. I'd love to have you back on when you've got time and your busy schedule. But I've been so grateful to connect with you today and to learn from you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me on. Appreciate it.
That's it this week for Pushing the Limits. Be sure to rate, review, and share with your friends. Head over and visit Lisa and her team at lisatamati.com.